Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Ruben's Podcast, a show where I speak to people about their lives over the last decade and the lessons they've learned along the way. On today's show, I'm speaking with Tarani Mahajan. I met Tarani in 2010, back in university. Tarani's had a really interesting decade. After graduating with a degree in philosophy, she worked for a bit, got a master's, and decided to spend an entire year in Colombia to practice her Spanish. Instead of continuing down the academic route, she then decided to join the family business, manufacturing of hand tools, as industrial as it gets. In today's conversation, we talk more about why she made these decisions and dive into each of these experiences and more. Before we start, a quick message. If you've been enjoying these conversations and would like to support the podcast, you can now do that by buying me a coffee. You can find the link in the show notes below. We're also on Instagram. You can find us at Ruben's Podcast. Follow us there for latest updates on the show. Okay, with that, let's get into the conversation. So yeah, thanks a ton for making time to do this, Tarani. How have you been?
Thanks for having me, Ruben. I've been pretty good, yeah, despite the, you know, the years that have been, the past 2 years. Things have been good, yeah.
And you're currently in Delhi?
I am in Delhi, yes.
How long have you been there?
I've been here for a bit, like about 2.5 years now. I mean, I'm from Delhi. I've grown up here, went to school here, everything. Briefly went away, but now I've been back for like 2.5 years. So yeah, working here.
And based on your voice note, you're now part of the family business. Like you're like
I am,
an Indian businesswoman.
I am. I'm a business person. Yes, indeed.
That's crazy.
Who would have thought? Yeah, who would have thought? It is crazy. It's definitely from a place of privilege, I think, that I ended up here, but also with a lot of potential. So yeah, I'm here in the hand tools business. We manufacture and trade hand tools, so spanners, wrenches, chisels, hammers, like that's what we're doing. Yes.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
Over the next hour, there is so many exciting things I want to talk to you about. So you're very kind to send me a voice note. And just for people who are tuning in, a quick summary for those who don't know Tarani. Tarani and I went to university together. She was one of the two Taranis that I went to university together.
Yes.
And she studied philosophy in college. After we graduated, both of us did a pretty interesting trip to Kargil, which is in the north of India, in the foothills of the Himalayas, but in the Himalayas. We went there to visit a friend. Now when I think back, I don't really know what the purpose of that trip was, but we basically went there and worked at a school for like 2 weeks, which was like pretty damn amazing. And that's how sort of, I think Tarani and I got really close after college. You then went, did a couple of gigs, worked at Discovery for a while, and then ORF, and then decided that you would get a master's at Ambedkar in sociology. Post which you decided that you wanted to learn Spanish, and well, if you really wanted to learn Spanish, you landed up in Colombia to teach Spanish to high school kids. Like, what? Seriously? But anyway, that's how you landed up in Colombia. Spent a year teaching Spanish to high school, like teaching in Spanish.
English.
Or teaching English
in high Spanish.
School. God, that's so complicated. But you were teaching English to Spanish high school kids in Spanish. And then most recently, when you were contemplating if you wanted to do a second master's, you decided that you actually wanted to, the family business would help you reach the same goals as a second master's, which I'm just super curious about. But so all of that in the next 1 hour. Before that, a word from our sponsor. No, we don't have any sponsors. If you would like to support the show, please go buy Ruben a coffee. We don't have any sponsors yet. But maybe a good place to start is, like, in college, there were like maybe a handful of you guys who studied philosophy. And post, you know, now in retrospect, you've done so many exciting things, right? But when you were in college and when you were studying philo, like at the end of third year, what was your plan? Like,
I think as a degree, philosophy was mostly just about being in the liberal arts sphere and sort of getting exposure in that on that front. Yeah. I remember very clearly after like my 12th grade, I wanted to do something in media, like, you know, journalism or mass communication or something like that. Yeah. And my grandfather, my paternal grandfather at the time was like, no, you know, you must get a liberal arts degree first. Wow. And this and that. And yeah, he was very encouraging of that somehow, like, you know, open up your mind first, like figure out the world a little bit and things like that. Which at the time I was like, this is just, you know, like, should I be rebelling against this? Like, but no, so applied for a few, liberal arts degrees here and there, and landed up at Stephens. And so I think after that also, I kind of wanted to explore the media sort of section still, because, you know, I was told, okay, even if you do a liberal arts degree, you can still pursue that in that sense. So I started looking for work in that direction, and I was very clear, okay, like media, journalism, like something fun, you know. Discovery is what kind of just happened, like it just happened on its own. So so I was very set on that media sort of stream, and ended up working at Discovery, which was a very good experience, because I was like, oh, okay, so nothing has been lost here in the past 3 years, because I'm not actually enjoying this a lot.
Why weren't you enjoying? Like, Discovery seems like a pretty great place. And that was your first job after college, right?
Yes.
And why did you not like it?
I think it was just mainly like administrative work and a lot of on desk kind of work. It wasn't really, I mean, I had these ideas that, you know, there'll be like, on the ground, like sort of exploring new, I don't know, like cities, cultures, like something of that sort. But it was literally just, you know, 9 to 5, like go to your Gurgaon office, like have that. So no. So that was the whole scene. I think the just the sort of, I mean, I think I might say some things that you will have to edit out later.
That's okay.
Like, it's just like,
let it flow.
Because I have, you know, I've developed certain opinions based on my very personal experiences. So this is not to like discredit anyone else's experience. It's really just my own personal, like, this thing. So I realized like even the media sphere was a little too eccentric for me. Like I needed some structure. And even though this was very like admin and very structured and everything, like not, you know, some form of like structure. So anyway, I think that's one of the reasons why I was just like, okay, I don't think that this is what I want to be doing. Like,
got it.
And over the years in college, through Stephens and everything, I'd already developed a very, very strong liking towards gender studies, or like, you know, just sort of development in that sector.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I was always curious, like people who go into philo, like when I was in college, at least I studied eco, and it was very clear that, oh, you would go into consulting, or you would go into like, you know, banking or whatever, or you go into startups. But like, I always wonder, people, like, even if you're in English or you were in physics, you know, the logical next step would be you would go to maybe a PhD or a master's. But in philo, I was always like, and to be honest, I never appreciated the subject until now. Like now when I'm sort of reading more about the, like just in general about like philosophy more, I have like much, much higher appreciation about the subject today.
Yeah.
But it's always curious to know, like, what do people think?
I mean,
okay, what are we going to do after college?
Yeah. Like same, like I think college was so like, it was such a breeze, and we did so many other things than just philo, you know. And that way I think we all were very lucky to be where we were, because obviously, like, you know, we had all these multiple experiences. But I think for me personally, philo in retrospect just helped in understanding certain whys, like why this, why that, you know, like it was a very, and even our professors, like everyone would really force you to question everything that you're observing, consuming, everything. Yeah. So today, 10 years down the line, with the kind of awareness levels that are now going around, you know, social media and everything, like those things become very, very important. I feel, you know, like you're also saying, you know, 10 years now we're a little more aware of certain things. So the why of it all, like, that really, really stuck with me.
Can you give me an example of how you apply that, like, constantly, like, at least the rigor of you know, constantly asking why do we believe this, to sort of some, like, an example of from your life?
Even for instance, like at work today, you know, if somebody, like one of my uncles or someone, wants to tell me, okay, like, you know, we have to do this, like, my first question is like, why do we have to do it? So that is, I feel, a very good starting point to actually understanding something, especially that's not from like your field of expertise. So that's really helped me, you know, in the past 2.5 years as well. Like, it's a very good starting point. Like, okay, why must we do that? Like, you know, what is the purpose of that? Like, how will it, what effect will it have on certain things? Yeah. So in that sense, yes. Very, very practical, very useful. It's really funny. Like, I might, okay, so this is one thing I can't wait to talk about. So I think I'll just jump right into it. So one of the things is, in our second year, I think first or second year, we had this whole thing called Introduction to Indian Philosophy, which had a Buddhist sort of section to it.
Correct.
And you know how DU is, you just have to like learn all your answers and then just go and write these long exams and things. So TK did that in the, you know, and you can choose, like, you can choose like 4 out of 5 questions. I was like, okay, one of them will be the Buddhist philosophy section. And I mugged it up very nicely, like, you know, 8-fold path, this and that, went and wrote it. TK did well. Okay, done. 3 years later, I'm sitting for my first Vipassana course and the whole section, just the theory of it, just passed before me, and I was like, oh my god, this is what I was studying. Like, here I finally found like a practical use, like, I'm putting it to use, you know. So yeah, I think it's helped me in a lot of ways.
That's crazy. That's crazy. So we'll talk about the meditation part later in the conversation, because I know that's something super cool and I'm very curious. But one thing I wanted to know is, right after college, you and I went to Sanku, right? So for context, a really close friend, and he hasn't shown up on the podcast yet, Nadeem Afroz.
I've really been looking forward to his episode, playing, by the way, and it just doesn't come along.
He's too busy. Maybe we need to start a petition.
Nadeem, we want you here.
So Nadeem, who was my roommate back in college, he's originally from the small village called Sanku, which is in the bigger area of Kargil. For people who don't know Kargil, it was part of the, it was whatever, it's up in Kashmir, and most people know it because of the war around in the, I think, the late 90s. There was a war between India and Pakistan, which was fought in the Kargil area. So we essentially went up there. Nadeem's family runs a school, and me, Tarni, Nikita, who was on the podcast, and Louis, who was also on the podcast. Four of us, along with Nadeem, we went to live there for 2.5 weeks. And I think the most vivid memory I have is how pink those kids' cheeks were.
Cheeks, yes.
They were so pink.
They were so cute. And they were like 8 to 10 year olds. So not very old. They were like 8 to 10. Yeah.
I don't know if Nadeem will send you pictures of them now. They're like adults. those small kids are like adults now. So it's pretty mind-blowing. But I think about that sort of those weeks. And I remember Louis and I used to talk a lot about it. But I'm curious to know what did those 2 weeks like leave you with any lessons? How did that experience affect you now when you think about it retrospectively?
So for one, I think even during college, like I sort of did a few internships here and there. One was at the Delhi Council for Child Welfare. And I think my experience with Sanku and the kids there was just basically, I realized I just love working with kids. You know, it was so much fun. And being in a space with so many children, I feel like you learn so much from them. Like, sure, we were there to, you know, teach them something. Like you said, like we just like made it up along the way what we were going to do with them. And I remember I took on the dancing part of it with them. Yeah. And, you know, I asked them like, okay, so what song do you guys want to dance to? And they're like, Disco Diwane. Like, you know,
yes, the time. I remember we choreographed that. Oh my God.
Yes, we did, right? Yeah, so, you know, and so one instance that happened was we were dancing and it was sort of during the day, and suddenly all these kids, like 8 to 10 year olds, they just sat down, and I was like perplexed, you know, like, what just happened? And I was about to like yell at them or maybe sort of discipline them or something of that sort. And it just so happened that Nadine walked in right then and stopped me from making a fool out of myself, because he was like, it's, you know, it's like one of the namaz readings that is happening. And so that's why the kids have just sort of taken a pause and whatever, you know. So that for me was just like, wow, I would have never thought that. There's no kid trying to explain to me what's going on. They're just like in their actions telling me like, okay, that's, you know, so definitely like that little experience with the children was amazing. Like, I think that definitely drove me to consider at various points being involved with kids and you know, in this capacity. But also, of course, like the fact that we had to charge all our devices for 3 hours that we got at night, so we could watch some television shows that were all happening at the time.
It was crazy. I remember, like, you would wake up every morning and there were the mountains at the back and you could hear like the river.
It was so beautiful. That was magical. We would sit in Nadeem's living room and he had these big glass windows that would just sort of look out right into these big mountains. And in any case, like, the mountains in Ladakh are so different from, you know, anywhere else, because like just massive. And that was such a great
time. I vividly remember that trip. I think one thing I remember the most is, I don't know if you remember this, but when we would go to meet the kids, and you do, I don't remember if it was just the girls or the guys, but when you would put your hand out to shake their hands, they would pull their hand inside their sleeve and then try and shake it. You remember that? I don't know if they did it to you. Probably did it with me and Lewis.
Yeah.
It was like, what?
But didn't we do that really fun, that put your right hand in? You did that with them and we all joined in. Yeah, that was such a great.
It's crazy. So I remember Lewis and I had this long conversation post that trip around, you know, how just a little bit of money. And I think that was a big driver. I remember a few years later, for my birthday, I was just thinking, what should I do for my birthday? And for people to remember, I think this was my, 2016. My birthday, we did like a small fundraiser and I gave the cash to Dean for the school. And then, of course, Crayons for Kargil happened, which was a big thing for and I remember me and Lewis chatting about, you know, how just a little bit of cash could help these kids come down to like a Delhi and see what is possible. And an interesting thing we were debating about is why do you need to do that? Like, what was wrong in them just staying there and just being happy in that village, right? Why do you have to bring them to the city and like...
Definitely. I mean, that's the other thing. And, you know, I mean, maybe as we go along, we can talk about it a bit more, but just how people are so content. Like, these kids are content. They're happy.
Yeah.
We're just we don't need to go and disrupt that. Like, if they have, of course, like access and education and everybody, like, you know, deserves that. But yeah, I mean, they're content. I don't know.
Yeah. So to maybe fast forward a few years, and since you touched upon the point of content, the second place we saw people who were really content were Colombia. So we'll talk about how you landed up in Colombia, which is absolutely crazy. But talk to me about life in Colombia. Like, you mentioned that people there are just, you know, really chill, very, very happy with the slow pace of life.
Yeah.
Like, describe to me what this feels like.
Yeah. So I was in two places in Colombia. Mm-hmm. One of them, and both, one of them was like a small city, and the second place was a big town. That's the kind of, you know, not too many people in either of the two places. The first one was right in the middle of the Andes, so like again, like a very Ladakh type scene, but the but the mountains are completely green, like they'll change color every like, you know, every day and things like that. Like that whole thing with Marquez and his magical realism is so true. Like, he's Colombian, and you know, we would read a lot of that, and then it was just happening in front of me, and I was like, what? But so obviously the size of the places was small, not too big.
Yeah.
And main sort of occupation for people there is like just like farming, and you know, it's very agriculture based, and people are very connected to the land and have this whole Pachamama, like this feeling towards, you know, nature.
What is the word you use? Pachamama?
Pachamama. Like, it's a like close to the close to nature, sort of like mother nature is, you know, like the mom and things like that. So so I think two things. Like, one is because you're so close to nature, and this is something I learned and experienced, like just being close to nature really like uplifts your mood in any case. Like, you know, I think as compared to big cities and things, like so people there are definitely content, you know, for these two reasons. Like, they're just like agriculture based, nothing, like there's no rush to get anywhere, to one up someone, like, you know, it's very community oriented, very family oriented, very slow, relaxed. Like, they're one of their favorite words is like tranquila, which is like just tranquil, like, you know, chill out. Like, just cab drivers will tell you, like, okay, tranquila. I'd be like, can we go a little faster? Like, I'm running a little late. Like, tranquila, like, you know, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, Yeah. So I think people are very content. In fact, once what happened was, and I had to really change myself on that front, like, I would walk from my home to the school where I was teaching at, and this is in the first place called San Juan de Pasto. So the first one is like Pasto, and the second is Palmira. And so I was walking down the hill, like towards my school and everything, like early in the morning. And suddenly I realized I'm walking too fast. Everybody else on the road is just leisurely, like, pacing away. And I was like, why am I walking so fast? Like, you know, I was in no rush. I was on time, like, no stress. Just, even if I went 5 minutes late, it's very, like, chalta hai, like, you know, that sort of an attitude. Like, it flies, it's okay. But yeah, so I had to... After that, I really slowed my pace down on, like, the streets. I was like, there's just no need to walk that fast.
Yeah.
Like, you know. And I suppose once you start doing that, you automatically become more observant. Like, you're taking in a lot more of your surroundings.
Yeah.
you know, things like that. So, yeah. Super content. One day at with a colleague, I was discussing, like, you know, the cars on the road, like, they're so, you know, like the old looking cars on the road. And she just like turned around, she's like, you mean just cars, like, right? Like normal cars. Like, and I was like, yeah, okay, sorry. Like, just those kind of things, like how people aren't even thinking, like, okay, what's the next best, like, luxury car that, you know, we have to sort of aim for, and therefore our life should revolve around that. No, just...
Well, why do you think people are like that? Is it made like, I get the point wherein because you're close to nature, you're just a bit more chill. But like culturally, did you notice something on why people in Colombia are like that? And like, for example, why people in Delhi are not?
So I think one is like, obviously, you know, we can talk about access and exposure again. Like, one of the reasons why I was there was so that students in these smaller places can learn a language that will then increase their chances of, you know, interacting with people in different parts of the world, that will open up certain opportunities for them. So I think one of it is, one reason is probably because they just, there's no sense of competition, there's no lack of opportunity, because I mean, universally, there is, not that much to do in terms of, you know, like the jobs that you have or the kind
the
of
standard like, is just low like, in general.
Yeah, the standard is just low in general. Yeah. Especially in these smaller places. So I think that just, but nobody's feeling a lack. Like nobody's unhappy. You know, of course people have problems and we stayed with families and everyone has their ups and downs. And all, but nobody's feeling like, you know, why am I stuck here? Or dealing with depression or anxiety and all these other like, you know, mental health related issues that so much of us like have to deal with. Or, like, it's just...
It's so true. Correct. So, and I think this going back to the summer, right? I think those kids were there and they probably will, I don't know if they're still there or they're not, but they're probably pretty content and happy with where they are and they don't find this lack of something else.
And I mean, you know, it's, I see people around in these places and whether it's in Colombia or in Sanku or any other, like, you know, very nature oriented, like smaller places that you visit where there's no rush of everyday life. Like, people are just observing, like they'll just observe whatever is happening around them. Mm. It's not a scrolling, like, you know, sort of a culture yet. It's not, we have to post everything on social media that is happening in our lives and things like that. So I think that automatically like just adds to a very relaxed sort of state of mind. Like, just,
So let's talk about how you actually landed up in Colombia. So after Discovery, you spent a few years there and you were not very happy with the work there. You decided to go get a master's. I think, was it after your master's, you suddenly had this urge to study Spanish?
During my master's.
During your master's. Yeah, so why did you want to learn Spanish? Because you wanted to go to South America, or you started studying Spanish and then you were like, oh, let me just go to South America to perfect this?
The latter is how it happened. So it's interesting. Like, okay, so I was doing my master's in Delhi, which was a very conscious decision. Again, I was like, okay, I want to be sort of close to my family who were going through a slightly transitional phase. And I was very sure that I wanted to do a master's as well. Chose to do it at Ambedkar University and not at a JNU or something of that sort because...
Yeah, why so?
Mainly because they have a dissertation component like AUD does. And I wanted to sort of, you know, I think I mentioned this to you also, like produce a body of work and just not, you know, again, mug up for exams and then like go down the already known path. So that was one reason. And the second one was AUD was a relatively, like it was a new institution. It had just come up. And I personally feel from, again, experience that new institutions are more eager to sort of establish themselves. So they'll give you more opportunities, you know, they'll want to try new things. And that is exactly what happened in my 2 years at AUD. So I was doing that in my second year and sociology, right? Like I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed doing that. Like I loved doing sociology in a way that I never thought I would. Again, like it just happened for me, you know. And it really complemented my exposure in with philosophy as to the why of things. The sociology angle really brought in the how, like how are certain structures operating, like why is that? Again, so it was just like it was very wholesome like that. So in my second year I had to, you know, finally decide my topic for this dissertation and stuff, and somehow I don't know, just this whole concept of like migration and like, you know, cultures coming together, people moving from one place to another, and all of that started like just becoming very, very like, it just pulled me. Like there was just no, like that is the only thing I was interested in. Like I just wanted to understand movement of people, you know. So along the way I had this idea that I wanted to do the Luso Indian, what we call like the, you know, the community from Goa. Like I wanted to do my dissertation on the Portuguese speaking people, and so I was like, okay, Portuguese, interesting, Spanish comes close. And I started thinking of like, you know, okay, like here's a language that is used in an entire continent. Yeah. Like that's a lot of people speaking this language. Like, okay, like a massive continent. I don't even know how many countries. Like, and we don't know anything about them. Like, I want access to that. So it was literally like, you know, I was definitely thinking longer term, but I was like, okay, like, if I want to be in the US or if I want to be anywhere else, like being in the US, like Spanish is a great language to sort of know. And then, So that sort of drove me to go for classes at Cervantes, like Instituto Cervantes, which is the, you know, the cultural sort of institute of this Spanish embassy in Delhi.
Yeah.
Started taking classes there. It was good. It was a good time. I had some really good teachers and the classes were interactive and good. Pedro, I remember, like very like fun, like, you know, but just not like, I wasn't being able to speak it. I didn't know who else to like interact with it. So,
But wait, one second, if I can interrupt you. You were doing this so that you could do like a research thesis for your master's, or you were just like, there's this massive continent, I just want to speak that language.
So that was the, like, that was the sort of long-term perspective from it. Like, you know, the thesis got me thinking of Portuguese, like that's how, as a language. And then I, you know, after some research, I was like, okay, so like, if I do learn Portuguese right now for my thesis, like, what are the next, like, how, what does it open up for me?
Okay.
Like, you know, and then Brazil and, you know, all
correct.
Like, and I was like, TK, like, you know, and then just in that research of itself, I was like, dude, the Spanish just sounds like, so that
you just finished watching Zindagi Na Milegi Dobara, right? That was the reason, wasn't it?
No, what nonsense, not at all. Never been influenced by like that, like, definitely not that movie. But Ruben, we did so much salsa. All of those parties while we were at Dane also. Like after that, there was just so much salsa in our lives. So I was just like, this just sounds really fun. Like, you know, it was again like, and it will help me in my, you know. And by that time during my master's, like, okay, international development karenge, public policy karenge. So like knowing a language that
correct.
It just fits, like, you know, on my CV, it just fits. Yeah, it's a plus.
Yeah.
So anyway, I did these classes and everything. Yeah. And in
which
the
is
meantime,
what
my,
people do. They start going to the center, they start doing a class, but then you took it a bit to the next extreme.
Right. So it was great fun. So basically, so I finished my master's and then one day, so I do a lot of this solo dancing. Okay. Just like, it's my form of like, just whatever release and this and that. So I do a lot of solo dancing. Similar, something was happening and somehow Shakira's Hips Don't Lie was on the playlist that day. Okay. And I was like, TK, you know, like dancing to that and whatever. And suddenly I heard refugees. Okay, so I heard the word refugees. And what had happened was I had just finished writing my thesis.
Yeah.
And which was not on the Luso Indian community, by the way, finally. It was on the Rohingya refugees from Burma who had traveled from there to Delhi and sort of studying their lives in Delhi. So obviously Rohingya refugees, and I'm like, I have refugees in my mind. I was like, constantly for 6 months just thinking of the Rohingyas, this and that. So like my ears sort of stood up. That was the first thing. And in the same song there was something where like make me speak Spanish or something. There's a lyric like that, you know, I'm forgetting that. How can I forget the lyrics? Okay, so there was something like oh, like, oh, I speak Spanish or something like that. I was like, what? Like refugees, Spanish, Colombia, what's going on? These are all words from Hips Don't Lie. Okay, like Shakira going in. So the same evening I picked up my computer and I was like, okay, like fellowships in South America, like that's all I did. And just somehow this teaching fellowship that the Ministry of Education, that the Colombian Ministry of Education had just floated, popped up. And I was like, I think this is it. Like, not just. So yeah, that's that's just how it happened. I don't know what else to say. Like,
so you applied for this fellowship, and it was a fellowship to teach English.
English, yeah.
But you're not qualified to teach English.
No, no. I so along the way, like I took an exam that did sort of make me.
Got it.
Not very tough to do. So did that. Got it. So it.
And then, like, what was your plan for this year? Like, were you going there infinitely, or were you going there? Okay, I'm going to go, like, whatever, do this for a year, maybe learn this language, and eventually help me when I apply to the UN with the second language. Was that the plan, or just like?
Yes.
Just go and settle in Colombia.
No. There was no like settling down plan in Colombia. I was very, very clear on that. Like, I was like, okay, this is. You know, this is 1 year of international work experience that I'm sort of going to get from my CV. Like, it was very CV oriented. So, going to do that, like, learn this language, and, you know, then again, like, apply for a second master's, which I was like, okay, I want to do from one of the better known, like, universities or whatever, like, get the brand value and this and that. So I was very sure, like, okay, one year program. Yeah. And a lot of my friends, you know, like in Colombia, they like, they stayed on, and people from here and there, like they did all that. But I was like, no, take care. 1 year, this is the plan. Which honestly, like, helped me throughout the year as well, because it made me less homesick. It made me, because I didn't come back for that entire year. Like, so it made me less homesick. It made me more sort of focused. And I really wanted to just make the most of my time there, like, you know. Which I did. So it was like,
Is that fellowship still active today? Like, can people still apply for it today?
Yes, it's called Heart for Change. So people can, I think, still apply for the fellowship. Yeah, you can do 6 months or you can do a year. I chose to do the year. So yeah. And no, I did not know these Pasto and Palmira. I barely learned where Colombia was on the map, like, you know, after I applied for it. Like, the plan was set, but without a plan. Like, I don't think it was just because again, like, I was thinking long term, and this is, so the smaller things along the way, like, I was like, okay, where's Pasto? Like, after they told me that I'd be in Pasto, like, I looked it up, and you know, things
that's
like
crazy.
That.
So you apply for this, you get the fellowship. You suddenly are going to fucking Colombia. You pack your bags, you take a flight, and you land up in, I don't know, like, what is the capital? Bogota?
Bogota,
You land up in Bogota. What is it like? Describe to me how Colombia, I've of course never been to Colombia. And I think most people who listen to this podcast have not been to Colombia. What is Colombia
now
like?
A lot of people, it's really opening up, of course. Like, people want to sort of explore that.
Is it like how they paint the picture in Narcos? So people just drug lords running around.
Ruben, you will not believe it. Like, okay, so Narcos had just come out with like its first or its second season, I think. And I had not watched the show till then. Okay, so I applied for this fellowship. I got it. And, you know, I booked my tickets. So the day I booked my tickets, the day after that, I was like, okay, now I think I will watch the TV show. Because had I watched it before that, I don't know. Like, you know, it's a little freaky. It's a little freaky, like, obviously, like, again, philos, sociology, you can come with all this academic, like, training of your mind, be like, you know, be open to the world, and this and that, and of course, pop culture is not the, like, you know, the final word, and this and that, but it is, like, it's violent, and it's a little freaky, so I did not watch Narcos, like, till it was really time for me to go, I don't know, like, so yes, literally, like, just, packed my bags and landed up in Bogota. We had some people from the program, you know, who were at the airport and things like that. We spent the first about 2-3 weeks in Bogota. Yeah. And when I say we, I mean all the like fellows from around the world who had like come for the program, and we had an orientation week and sort of just so it was still very like it was very multicultural, but it wasn't Colombian yet, you know. It was still very people from the UK, US, like all like Jamaica, like one of my very good friends, like she was also there. So I mean so just like people from all over, and you are still learning certain things about the country from people who've been a part of the program, and I'm just telling you, okay, like, you know, don't be like, just don't do stupid things, like, just don't randomly, like, don't randomly sit in a cab, in a shared cab, like, you know, don't just, or be, you know, it seems silly to me because I come from Delhi. Like, Delhi is like, as far as safety goes, you know, you learn a learn a few things along the way, like growing up in Delhi. But I suppose, you know, not everyone has that opportunity or whatever. Yeah. So we were sort of told the do's and don'ts according to people who've been there. So it's very like quote unquote international in that sense. And then finally, we went off to our smaller places and things. So for me personally, it was very easy to integrate. Like, I did not have too much problem in integrating, or Colombians themselves being a bit hostile because my skin color was very close to theirs, for instance. So I'm not very obviously from a different place. Like, correct. It was easier to fit in, so they were more accepting. Plus, like, you know, for you and me sitting here, Colombia, oh my God, like, you know, what's going on? Yeah. Whereas for the Colombians, like, okay, the US, Miami, like, it's very, like, now it's, like that world has opened up for correct. Them, but something like in India is still very fascinating. Like, you know, like, what's going on over there?
What do they think about India? Like, what do these like high school kids think about India?
So, you know, they okay. So, for instance, like, I think they have these notions of okay, everybody's like God fearing, and which is, I mean, religion, I suppose, is something that they think a lot about because. In India, because they themselves are very religious, like it's a very super religious, super Catholic like country, and you know, so we definitely bonded over that as well, because I was like, okay, I understand it, I might not prescribe to it, but I understand it, and it's like, it's fascinating and things like that. One of the kids, we were doing a lesson, and this is, I was teaching high school kids, so they're slightly older. What they think of, I'm sort of answering that question, like these, with these anecdotes. So one of the kids was just like, I think he was like 15 or something. We were doing a lesson in patriarchy, and everyone had to come and sort of write their opinions of it on the board and things like that. And one of the guys was just like, I'm not going to do it. And I was like, you know, like, what do you mean you're not going to do it? You know, he's like, no, this is something that happens only in your country and not in ours. Like, you know, so I was just like, what? Of course, everybody else in his class disagreed with that. But I'm just saying, like, this, you know, variety of sort of opinions that, you know, like, oh, India is very unsafe. But there's also, like, a lot of people. But it's very colorful. Like, basic sort of stuff like that. Like the kids
no, fair, didn't finish.
Just the kids teach you so much, you know. I learned so much that year, and a huge part of that was because of the kids I was interacting with. Like like, we were doing this I had to do these multicultural events with them, and for that we did some obviously Bollywood dancing. And so that was like the outside class. And okay, so they love dancing. Colombians love dancing. I love them because I think they just love dancing. Okay, and boys and girls alike. Like, when we were in high school, I don't remember a single guy who would be so enthu about, you know, be like, no, let's dance and this and that. And if over here, it's like, if you don't know how to dance, you're probably the anomaly. Like, you know, there's something wrong with you. Like, I was like, this is great. So we were doing, India to Bachke or something, and they nailed it, right? One of the classes, the girls, they didn't have like a covering on their neck, right? Like, so I was like, okay, wear a scarf or something. Because that's a part of the attire, like, you know, wear a scarf. And these other class boys they didn't have their costume on time. So all of them wanted to dance shirtless. I was like, okay, fine, whatever. You do whatever you want. Like, you know, I mean, I'm not here to police you. We're just together for a few months, so fine, you want to do that, you do that. Do the dance part. And so they went on stage shirtless, and these girls, I was like, please, like, find some scarves so the dress looks complete and this and that. They were so taken aback. One of my colleagues tells me later, they're like, you know, Tarini was asking us to like wear a scarf and this and that, but she let the boys from, you know, 10B just go shirtless. Like, what is this, you know? And I was like, oh my god, like, here I am thinking, like, you know, we're making some revolutions in the gender sphere and this and that, and I just like, shit, like, nice one, kids, nice one. So some great stuff like that.
If you had to think back, like, what is like one highlight moment of your year in Colombia, which you vividly remember?
Oh my god! Okay, so obviously there are way too many nice ones. I can go on like these because there's just so many, you know, like in school, outside school, how people are so welcoming. Like, teachers would just be like, "Okay, come to our house." Like, you know, just the usual sort of, and an exchange of cultures and just ideas, and you know how you realize that people are so similar. Everybody everywhere is just so similar, like, and that for me is just that's just such a beautiful thing. But okay, one thing was, and this was not a fun incident, it was like, I almost got mugged. So that was like my first, the first and only time that I thought that I was in a slightly scary place, like, because it was in broad daylight and, you know, this guy just wanted to like snatch my bag, and I snatched it back because, again, grown up in Delhi with siblings and things like that. So like, you know, there's like just, but. So I don't think like, yes, to people listening, please go visit Colombia. It's a beautiful country with beautiful people. Like, there's nothing to be scared about. Like, there's no violence or anything. Even if this was the one episode that stood out. And some other, like, guns were pulled out. I don't know.
What? Guns were pulled out?
I mean, like, my neighbor, like, I saw it happen to my neighbor. It was happening right in front of me. But it was, like, at night. But anyway, this is, like, the slightly scarier. Like, Palmyra is technically the, I think it's like listed as the second most dangerous place in the world or something like that. So yeah. And I was like all by myself in that place. It was like a little freaky.
How do you justify all this to your parents? Like, hey, I'm going to Colombia, I'm going to Palmyra. It just happens to be the second most dangerous place in the planet. But you know what? I grew up in Delhi, so I'm prepped.
No, I don't think that was the only, they've been super supportive as well, you know, for anything that I might choose to do, whether or not it, you know, I don't know, somehow they've just been super supportive. So even at one point, like, I think, again, like at the start of my master's, I was helping a friend of mine at Brown to do this thesis of his in, he was writing it on the Naxalite movement and you know how it started. So he's like, oh, can you help me like do the translations and things like Hindi, Bengali, sort of that. And I was like, okay, cool, we'll do that. So, you know, went hunting for these OG Naxalites like in Naxalbari and things like that. So at that, like, that was the start of these, you know, really adventurous things, I think, like these really scary, supposedly scary scenarios, hunting down the Naxalites. So my parents at that point were like, okay, this is a little freaky, like, we don't know what you're trying to do. But still, you know, they were still supportive and whatever, so like, just be careful and things like that. So that, even the Rohingya experience was, I mean, it's not the easiest, you know, there are some situations that just test you, like, they just, they're challenging. So
what was the most challenging part when you were in Colombia, apart from all this good stuff and the salsa and the loving people and the occasional guns getting pulled out? But over that entire 1 year, what did you find like the hardest challenge to get through?
It could be cooking.
Cocaine?
Because it was very difficult to find ingredients that were known to me.
Cooking. I heard cocaine. I'm like,
cocaine. Of course you heard cocaine. I mean, we're talking about
Colombia. sorry, my bad.
It was very hard for me to stay off of that, you know, Rupert. No. No, no, no. Each experience in its own place. But cooking, yes, personally cooking, because it was very hard, like to, you know, first go grocery shopping, then to like forget. Like one time I forgot to carry my phone and I reached the store and I wanted garlic and I just forgot the word for garlic. And she just, you know, like she wouldn't understand me and I wouldn't understand her. So it was just like this kind of messy situation where, you know, yeah, so like the food part of it was a bit challenging, but of course like you adapt along the way, and then I found a few favorites and things. But
what is Colombian food like?
So I had some family visiting me actually during my period there, and they, according to them, it's super bland, which works for me. I cannot handle like spicy food or anything of that sort, but it's just, it's like it's super bland, basic, like potatoes, corn, a lot of meat.
Got it. So you spent an entire year doing this stuff. And at the end of the year, you mentioned that you were thinking of doing a second master's.
Yeah.
And somehow you landed up in the family business trading hand tools.
Yes.
How does one, like, apple to apple comparison? But I'm very curious to know how you went from deciding, or the original plan of going to a second master's, to eventually landing up at the family business.
I think the way it worked, okay, so I started becoming very... I wanted to know the reasons as to why I wanted to do a second master. So sure, when I decided international exposure and the language and everything, it was very obviously pointing towards international development, public policy, things like that. And again, like, you know, like learning the language, like I traveled around the region a bit while I was there. And it's true, like with the language, I could go to like 4 or 5 different countries and everybody understood me and it was very easy to sort of communicate. So I was like, theek hai, yehi karna hai, and we will do that. Thought about the reasons as to why I wanted to do international development, public policy. Like, okay, you want to do a second master's because you want to be in the academic space. Like you want to go back to school because it's like invigorating like that.
Yeah.
But why these ones in particular, you know? And like we've spoke about it a bit, like gender, child development, these were sort of some, you know, like refugee welfare, things like that were the spaces that I wanted to sort of, you know, make an impact, like basically just be able to be in a position where certain policies will be for the betterment of a certain section of people.
Yeah.
That was one of the, you know, main reasons why I wanted to do what I wanted to do. Second was, of course, like growth. Like, so will this work? Will the work after the master's, you know, mean personal growth? Will I be able to contribute to an organization's growth? Things like that. Yeah, so just essentially just these three sort of, you know, making an impact, gender-oriented, child-oriented, and just growth-oriented. So while in this period, then I came back, I was contemplating working with, you know, you had that period. So I came back in Jan, and then I had that period for applying to like July, so like a six-month period in between. So I applied. I applied for all these, you know, I told you, like here and there, everywhere, like you name it. And I was like, yeah, my application's in, done, like, you know, very confident, like this and that. And at the same time, I'm looking to work for a little bit because I can't like sit idle. Like I need to, you know, so it's like, okay, fine. I already had this brief working period with UN Women earlier in 2015, 2016, something like that. So I kind of knew, like, so there's the ADB or something, all these places that sort of are similar in nature. So I applied for the master's, and I'm looking for work at these places, which was being a little tough to get at the time. And so my grandfather like comes up to me and says, okay, well, you know, here's some work, and why don't you consider this, you know? What, like,
is this the same grandfather who told you? Is this the same grandfather who told
you? This is my maternal.
Oh, this is the other grandfather. Okay.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate like that. Like both of them have just been such, like, you know, like wise, like just wisdom around me. He comes around me, he's like, so here's some work, like, you know, why don't you consider? I'm like, what? Like hand tools, like there are factories, like this just goes against anything and everything that I've sort of trained myself in, like, yeah, especially academically, you know, like, and here I was like working with the Naxalites. Now you want me to join like a bunch of industrialists. Like, how will this, you know, like, how do I bridge this sort of these two,
yeah,
seemingly opposing, you know, sides of things. And honestly, till today, that is a constant, like, it's a constant endeavor. It's not that, you know, just, but okay, fine. I was like, okay, fine. I'll consider it. And I did. I gave it a thought. And somehow just these three factors, you know, making an impact, being able to challenge and change certain things in the gender sphere of things, and also like just growth, like direct opportunity, direct potential for the organization to grow as well as myself. Like if I don't grow, the organization doesn't grow and vice versa. So I was like, yeah, okay, so it fits in, like, let's do it. A second master's might have meant a PhD, and at the time I was thinking, you know, I had my life planned out, like, okay, I'll do a PhD when I want to kind of, like, settle down and, you know, like, sort of maybe, like, have a kid or something of my own or something, yeah, like that. So then, you know, if I do a PhD then I won't have to, like, do a desk job. I won't be away from work. So it was like my mind was already running in those directions.
Correct.
So I was like, okay, well, here I am. If I do, like, my own thing,
yeah,
I will have some more flexibility as well.
Yeah.
Little did I know that that's not the case. Like, it's just completely the opposite. Like, I feel like I'm so much more on my toes, constantly thinking about work, you know.
Yeah.
There's no, like there's no point that I can just switch off. Like, it's, yeah, just something or the other always. But yeah, those were the reasons why I got involved in this industrial sector, which
got
is
it.
Very... male dominated, like, it's very,
I can imagine.
So yeah, and so, but in the past 1.5 years, I think in some small ways we're already starting to, like, you know, change things a bit. Like, we're now almost at like 50%, like 50-50 gender balance of, like, workers.
Wow.
So at least that, like, that was a goal that I was like, okay, this is the first thing I want to do. Then we, like, talk about the rest. So yeah, just like these things.
That's crazy.
I am just,
so you've, yeah, been at the, you've been part of the business for 2.5 years now.
For about, yeah, 2.5 years now.
Wow.
Yes.
And like, what part of the business do you manage? Like, do you run the entire show or do you, like, take care of one part of it?
So I think, like, right now, I'm essentially just shadowing two people who do, like, do the operations at, like the macro level. Like, they do,
yeah,
sort of look at all aspects of it. And it's, right, very, like, intensive decision making and things like that. So that is, I think, what, like, the where
that's,
I'm headed, basically. Yeah,
got it.
Yeah.
So basically,
I think in another, like, so that's another thing, you know, Ruben, like, for instance, when I did my UN women's stint,
yeah,
I realized, like, a lot of years of my life will just go into climbing up the ladder. Like, I will eventually want to be at a, you know, in a position where I can make decisions that will have certain impact.
Yeah.
But here it is where, you know, again, privilege, but also potential, where I can be in that,
correct,
you know, in that sort of space, make certain decisions that will,
yeah,
have direct impact.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not constantly thinking about my paycheck or my, like, you know, of course I am, but that's not my only agenda, like,
yeah,
or to move up the ranks, you know. It's,
yeah,
like, so many other people's, like, livelihoods and things like that. So, yeah, I guess I just find it, like, a lot more meaningful than I did, like, working anywhere else. So
wow,
that makes me happy. Yeah,
that's absolutely crazy. Because you started off like in this highly academic career, and now you like transition into business. And like most people do like tech and, you know, corporate, but this is like as real as it gets.
It's manufacturing. Yeah. It's like a very industrial, like,
That's crazy. So
it's very on the ground. Like, like, I mean, you know, people are working from home and things. Like in the past 2 years, we can't, we don't have the luxury to do that. Like if people aren't showing up in their units, like we're not doing any work, you know? So, so yeah, it's quite different. And,
So my question was like, what keeps you up at night? Like running a business is not an easy job, but like what keeps you up at night?
I guess I'm just constantly like, okay, like, are we staying with the times? Like, are we thinking a little ahead of the times? Like, how can we, you know, do better for everyone's betterment? Like, things like that. But also, obviously, like, again, growth at a personal level is such a huge factor as well, because you don't want to become redundant or sort of, you know, obsolete or, you know, for instance, like, okay, we've been doing hand tools since 1962. Now there are like power tools in the market, like things like that. So it's like, okay, if I'm not constantly doing my research, like it might be a little difficult going forward. So that's one part of it. And also like, okay, I think obviously it's not the easiest thing to do, right? Like suddenly like you're in this space where people know that you're over there because of your privilege. Like people know that like they have never worked. You know, I've had people say like, okay, we don't usually do business with ladies. I'm like, dude, if you want to like work now, so you please get used to this, you know, if you want to work with our company and things like that. So I guess it's just making sure that I'm not doubting myself too much. Like there's healthy sort of skepticism and, you know, points that I need to work on, but like just because lack of self-confidence and that's gone, like, you know, it won't be like so yeah, a lot of that just constantly I mean, I don't know, maybe you were expecting something more fun, but
that's true, like you gotta the point about like just being confident, because at the end of the day, like the buck does stop at you, and but maybe not right now, but eventually like the buck will stop at you, and you gotta own it up, man. Like you might not make the right decision, but you can't like be, oh, I don't know, so let's do this. You like, we're gonna fucking do this. May or may not work, and it's just my sort of burden to eventually bear. But it is quite hard knowing that there are, like, how many people do you guys employ?
At the moment, there are about, so the units that I'm looking after, which is just the hand tools and the LED, we're about like 200, 250.
That's crazy.
I mean, so that's all. I think we can just stick to that. I don't even want to think about the rest right now. It's like overwhelming for me a little bit.
Yeah.
So
is the second master's or a PhD down the path, or that's completely out of the windshield right now?
I think, I'm not considering it anymore. At least, like, I don't see myself for the next. Maybe, like, some days I get, like, oh, I just want to be in a classroom, like, you know, with like-minded people. I think that's more it, like, because right now it's, like, I don't have too many, like, work friends. Like, it's a massive family business. So, literally, like, there's a lot of family involved. So, and I mean, it's chill, like, you know, obviously super supportive, like very open, no stress like that. But at the end of the day, it's like, just like-minded people, I suppose. Yeah. So,
Lewis
for those reasons. But
says something very similar when he also works in the family business. And he's like, there are a lot of great parts about working with family, but there are also some like challenging like parts of working with family. And he thinks that is similar. Like, I think when he was working at corporate, you would meet sort of like a lot of people in your sort of like age group and just like that mental state. But that you sort of miss out when you work at the family.
But personally, I also feel that because I had some years of experience working with others and kind of, you know, all of that, I also like say 85% of the time don't feel like I'm missing out on much, because you know what it's like. Like, you know, you're like going out for drinks after work. Like there's still that friend, like you're still friends, but there's still that competition. Like, so it's never really, so you know what I'm trying to say? Yeah, like, it's just, yeah. So I guess, again, like, privilege, but potential that I can actually focus on, you know, the kind of, but sure. That way, I think we're so fortunate again. Like, I keep going back. Like, I have, like, so many of my good friends are from college or, like, you know, AUD and things like that. So, or from Colombia, like, so I think, yeah, like, some really deep, good friendships that I can count on. And so, we're lucky like that, I think, still, like.
When you sort of look back of all these years, my God, you started off, and like, going up to, like, Samku, and then working at Discovery, and then Masters, and then Colombia, and now selling spanners and hand tools. When you look back and think about, like, shifts in belief you had, like, things which you would believe very strongly for some amount of time, and now you, like have a 180 degree flip on it. Does anything come to mind?
Like, yes and no. I feel somehow it's all just fit in so well. Like, I haven't had to really let go of core ideas, you know, that I say started off with 10 years back. I haven't had to sort of do that, you know, so very fortunate like that. But also, like, again, like, the means to attain those, like, what is the way to get those, obviously, has changed. So
do you have two pieces of advice for your 19 year old self?
Do Vipassana at 19, not at 23. So, like, you know.
Yeah, tell me about Vipassana. You were supposed to talk about it because you taught Colombians this, but yeah.
When did
you start doing this Vipassana? Is it called Vipassana or is it called Vipassana?
I think it's just, I would say it's Vipassana because it's a, you know, it's like a Pali word and kind of just has that. But I mean, honestly, call it whatever, like, what's in the name, you know.
And this is the stuff where you go into this retreat for like 14 days and you don't talk to anybody.
10 days. Yeah, that's the one. So yeah, we did one part of that, which is called Anapan, with the Colombians, like the Bollywood dancing that was a part of the multicultural event. I was like, guys, we have to learn Anapan meditation. Like, that's what we have to do, you know. And, you know, you'd be surprised, like, the kids, they took to it so well. Like, it was consistent effort. I developed a program as I went along for the kids, which was, like, you know, over a course of, like, 2 months. It was fantastic. So now I'm trying to start something similar in schools with Delhi also, and then hopefully take it in other places as well. And we're calling it Almas Kalmas. Okay, so, but that's just a way of trying to spread this great technique that I've been able to learn, you know, over the years. And it's just like a gratitude for that.
Can you describe to me this technique and maybe, like, describe to me what the technique is very briefly, and, you know, what, like, how has it had, or, like, what kind of effect it's had to you? Because clearly it's had a pretty big impact on you, right?
Yeah. It's definitely, maybe I can talk about the impact first. Like, it's had an impact in the way, like, you know, for example, you're going into this completely unknown territory. So if I'm going into the Rohingya refugee camps, you know, it's like, it's so uncertain, things are so, and I'm going by myself, like, it's so into the unknown, like, you know, but it just somehow develops, like, helps you develop this, I don't even know what to call it, like, just an ability to take on whatever comes your way, you know, in that sense, in a very centered, or at least that's what the endeavor is, to be in a very centered, light, sort of with a lightness, like, decision making is lightness. There's less amount of fear, less amount of, like, doubts. So I think it's had a very practical impact on my life at various stages, whether it's, like, letting go of certain things that are just not serving me anymore, you know, or, like, coming up with new ideas, just experiencing new things, with an openness, like without any preconceived notions. So for example, in Colombia, like what preconceived notions are you going to have, you know? So like you're really experiencing something for the first time, like, yeah. And it's crazy how that just changes like life for you. Like, you know, it's just, of course, my familial relationships, everything, like everything is just a lot like friendlier. It's just friendly. Mm. Very nice. So the technique is essentially, I think 2,500 years old or something, but that's like the history part of it. Mm-hmm. It's taught in a 10-day course that mm-hmm. you go to attend. You can't talk to anyone. You obviously have to submit your phones and everything. Yeah. There's no like eye contact also, because like eye contact is also communication.
Yeah.
Like that. So you're really, really just by yourself for like 10 days, you know. So I've, yeah. there have been some courses that I've attended with other people, but yeah. even if you're going with other people, like you're all on your own, you know. Mm. 10 days, just you, your mind, your experiences, and the technique. You learn that. You learn the technique over a course of 10 days. They keep yeah. adding certain aspects of it every day, which is why you have to sort of stay there for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully you come out with having learned something amazing like that. You know, it's hard work. It's not yeah. easy. It's very, very rigorous. It's hard work. It's hard work, but very, very rewarding. So,
yeah.
and instantly rewarding. You don't have to like, yeah. Mm.
So I have a rough idea what happens to those 10 days, but like what happens after that? Like, what do you do on a, like, do you do stuff every day, or is it just like you go to the 10 day retreat and that's it? Suddenly like things change.
No, no, no. So first of all, it's like nothing is happening suddenly, right? Mm. Like, okay. So, and in the past, like, so I try to go for at least 2 a year, just to sort of refresh the
2 a year.
Yeah.
What?
That's yeah. It's good. Oh, wow. No, like it. It's
I've heard people like do it once and they love it, but they can never think they can go do it again.
Yeah. I think, sorry, what I'm just thinking about, like, all the 2 a year now.
No, my question is,
so, yeah.
What stuff do you do every day?
So ideally what they suggest is you've learned the technique, right? So you take yeah. 10 days to learn the technique. You yeah. can keep going again and again to refresh your skill in that sense, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's literally like a skill that you're developing for your mind and just everyday life. Ideally you would practice the technique maybe for 1 hour or 2 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself will definitely like start showing results. It's like maths, right? Like if the more you practice it, the better you get at it. So.
I've heard in those 10 days, like you go through excruciating pain because you're sitting up for like meditating for like 5 hours, 6 hours, your joints pain, your back pains. Is that true?
Yeah. Yes, of course that is. And a lot of times what happens is like, it's not just the first course that you'll go that might happen, you know, anything can happen at any point. So everybody's, of course, experience is very different. Like your experience, my experience, everyone's experience will be very different with the same technique. The technique is universal, but each individual will have their own experiences with it. And even for me, or for you, like even if you go repeatedly, each time will be a different experience.
Hmm.
So, you know, your joints might hurt, like say on one course.
Yeah.
You know, mine won't, but then the next time mine might and yours won't. So, I mean, it's so experiential like that. Yeah.
Got it. For me, it just sounds impossible. Like, how can you just go sit? Apparently, if you wake up at like 4:30 a.m. and like meditate the entire day, not talk to anybody.
Like, that's just the discipline part of it. You know, for me, like personally, I feel like, how did I go for so many years without even trying to like understand myself? Like, you know, like there's one person, literally just one person you are going to be with like your entire life, from the day you're born to the day you die. That's essentially you. Yeah. And I mean, the thought, you know, for me also, like in a lot of times, like the thought of just spending 10 days by myself, like leaving you know, work and friends and family and all of these things behind, yeah. and just, you know, being by myself for 10 days and not talking to anyone. It's scary. But then I'm also like, it's just me. Like, I mean, you know, what's going on here? I know so much about so many people, and so many people know so much about me, but like, do I really know? What do I know about me, you know? Why does my back hurt? Why does my head hurt when I'm sitting for that long? Is it just because, you know, because we're meant to sit for that long? Is it some other like heaviness that I'm carrying with myself? Like things like that, you know, just why am I making certain decisions that I'm making? Like, is it making me happy? Not, why not? Just.
So when was the first time when was the first time you did this?
Mine was right after college, actually. So I think actually it was in 2014 was when I did the first course. Because I remember like elections were going on and everything. And I was like, oh my god, who's gonna it's such trivial things and nothing. Like, you go for 10 days and I feel like the world is going to change, and I come out and it's so underwhelming. It's like nothing has changed. Like, actually nothing changes outside, but you know, just that, like, if I may, like, that inward journey, like, just it does something.
Oh man, so that's so fascinating. I can do it at some point. I know Lewis did this a few years ago, and I think David also did this. He mentioned on the podcast. I really want to do it. But
you've been saying that, Ruben. You and I have had this like chat for like been wanting to for a while. And you were trying this other like meditation technique also in between.
Yeah, so I meditate quite like I meditate every single day.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really a technique per se, but it's just like, it's more of just like sitting by yourself, not doing anything for like half an hour, just to basically live with your own thoughts. And that's something, you know, I started doing it quite, you know, regularly during the pandemic. And I think that has really, really helped me. So like, it was very hard even to get through like 5 minutes, but I'm very proud to say that I can like sit for an hour just doing nothing. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But I feel like
that's amazing. Yeah.
The next progression of this is doing this for 10 days. And I know people have done this, so you can survive, but yeah, it just seems like, oh my God, I'm too scared what things will come out.
And you know, but that's the beauty of the technique, Ruben, because like when things see at the end of the day, the technique is to be able to deal with the things that will come out. Because things will come out, obviously, you know, we're humans, they will.
Yeah.
But the technique helps you in like dealing with those. So
that's
why we learn it, I suppose. But that's great that like, you know, it's because even for me, like I got COVID and I just like, if there was one thing that I wanted to do was, and luckily it wasn't that bad. I was just like, okay, I'll just like meditate. Yeah. I was meditating for 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. So I was doing that for 14 days. Like, and that really helped me. Like, I don't know, maybe it could have gotten worse because I had all sorts of symptoms and all, but so
that's crazy. Well, hopefully this is enough motivation to get me to do it. Well, now I have a new job, so maybe not anytime soon, but yeah, I do want to do it. I need to make it happen sooner than later.
Yes.
Oh man, we're almost touching like the hour, more than the hour.
Yes,
but, what question do you have for me, Tarani, as we wrap this up?
When are you going for this 10-day course?
Oh man.
No.
By the way, just before the 10-day course, given that you've also done Speak Spanish Now, there's something else somebody had told me called the Camino de Santiago or something like this.
Oh, that's in Spain, right? The Camino.
That's the walk, where you just walk.
Yeah.
That's another thing I've been thinking about doing, which is apparently like similar, but
Yes. That sounds really fun.
Totally unrelated, but what question do you have for me? You can say you don't have any questions.
Are you happy, Ruben? Are you happy? Are you like well settled in Singapore? Like, are you not being deported now? No, okay, so let's go again. My question is, are you happy? Like,
I am. Like, it's a very, very big question, but I think where I am right now, things I am pretty happy. There are a few things I think I would like to do, like more or differently in like And I think it's up to me to sort of make that happen. But yeah, I think the last 1.5 year, like a bunch of things have changed in terms of priorities and things like that. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with how they stack up today versus maybe like 5 years ago. I know you must be tired after speaking for 1.5 hour, but we're going to wrap this. Thanks a ton for doing this, Tarni. Just like listening to this entire journey of yours from you firsthand, I think the stuff which I love the most is how you've just constantly just pursued your curiosity and it's taken you to such fantastic places. And yeah, very excited to see when we get you back on the show, maybe 10 years later when you're running this manufacturing unit and business, what that conversation is like. But yeah, thanks a ton for doing this. And
yes, thanks for having me, Rupen. Yeah, I'm so glad we chatted and some Sanku memories and everything. So fun.
Yeah, imagine this, if the guys at Sanku actually listen to this. That'd be pretty cool.
That would be really cool, na?
And that's a wrap. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of the podcast. If you've been enjoying these conversations, please leave us a review. You can review us on Apple Podcasts or any of your podcast players. If on Spotify, just go follow us. If you've enjoyed this ad-free experience, it's because we don't have any sponsors. But if you'd like to support the show, you can now buy us a coffee. You can find the link in the show notes below. I upload new episodes every Saturday, not Friday, and I'll see you in the next one.